Anyway, all right. So anyway, what does the text here say? All right. He says that there's no argument about whether it's Yeshem LeMikro or Yeshem LeMasora, right? Everybody agrees that you have to do it according to the way it's read. That includes Rabbi as well, right? So, the question is only, how did he come, you know, to five?
Yeah.
So, okay, so this is what we just read. The Rabbi Rabbanan, right? Rabbi and the rabbis, Behokim Miflgay, what is their disagreement about? It's Rabbi Savar, he's of the opinion that Yarshiyun Elohim, the word, you know, Yarshiyun means that the judges declare guilty. The judge said, you know, Russia, Yarshiyun, right? You understand, what is a Russia?
An evil person.
So, they have to declare that somebody is the evil party, right? Okay. So, therefore, he says, since it's written, Yarshiyun Elohim, so he says, that's Acharine. It means, then, that you have to have others who are there in order to deliver a verdict against whoever is the Russia. Okay,
I mean,
this is what he says. This is why he says that you have to have three judges in agreement, you know, to declare guilty. All right, this is what he's saying over there.
So you have three judges that declare guilty.
Right.
You have to have two more?
No, you start with three, according to Rebbe. This is Rebbe. Start with three judges, they hear what's going on, then you call in another two people who are also sitting there in the courts and add them to the...
Why?
This is his opinion. It's his opinion.
All right.
They don't agree with him.
But does he give any reason for why he wanted to add two more?
He interprets Yarshiyun Elohim to declare guilty. He says you have to have Elohim. In other words, you have to have a plural. And two isn't enough. You have to have
three.
You have to have three to declare guilty. Okay?
No.
So that's why it says, in order to have a majority opinion, so you have to have five judges at the end. So okay. That three can... reasoning. Okay. He gets... that's how he understands the word Yarshiyun. The rabbanon sorry, but what about the rabbis? What did they say? They say Yarshiyun dehei v'hai. In other words, the people who are the judges who have to give the verdict are the same judges who heard the case right from the very beginning. Dehei v'hai. So that therefore they also interpret the same pasuk Yarshiyun as a plural, but they say it's enough, you know, to have the same judges that who started the case to conclude the case, and so on. All right, so now they go on to another argument.
This now is halacha that the Chachamim have said that only three are necessary, not five?
Only three. And of the three, a decision can be given by two. That's the point of the argument. Okay. That two out of the three is enough to render a decision. Okay.
Yeah, but in case of what Rebbe says, two out of three is not enough.
That is correct.
Rebbe, five.
He says have to have three out of five.
But he's overruled.
Yes, of course. I mean, his opinion is not the opinion, that's the accepted one. The accepted one is what the Chachamim say. Okay. The Rabbanan, here they use the term Rabbanan to mean the sages. Okay. All right. Rabbi Yehuda ben Roe writes, Lo pligi Rabbanan ale. So he says, and how about the question of Rabbi Yehuda ben Roe? He was the one who said, should I read in the case of a woman who gives birth to a girl, right? Should I read it as Shavuayim, that she has to be for 2 weeks in a state of uncleanliness, you know, like a Nida, and then she becomes in a state of Tara after that? Or should I read it as Shivim, which is exactly the same spelling, okay? Today in modern Hebrew we would put in already an Adar Levav, we would put it maybe 2 yuds at the head before the mem, and so, you know, to show that since we write without vowels, so we should read it as shvuayim. But that's not what the Torah spells. The Torah is very economical in spelling. So the same spelling is shin, beis, ayin, yud, mem. Okay? I can give you another meaning. Sveim. What is sveim? Spelt exactly the same way. Sveim. You're satisfied. People who are satisfied, sveim. Like the achalta v'savata, right? Right. So it's spelled exactly the same way. Shin, beis, ayin, yud, mem. But obviously you have to read it according to what makes sense. And this is the point. This is why he says that in this case, the rabbis did not disagree with Rabbi Yehud ben Rovitz, that they also accept the reading Shvuayim as being the normative reading. It means 2 weeks, and 70 days is much too much, I mean, to expect it. So that's it. Read it as 2 weeks. That's the halacha, right? Right, right.
English has the same problem.
Oh, yeah.
Words.
Right.
Present, present.
True. Refuse, refuse.
Invalid, invalid.
Right.
Oversight, to miss it or to be in charge of.
That's a little different.
Right.
You actually pronounce the word differently.
Yeah, right.
According
the
to
spelling
the
is the same, but so, right. Read and read, for example.
Sorry?
Read and read.
Right, read and read.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there are many. It's a long list. But, I mean, the situation also has to do
right.
with the meaning in the sentence.
Exactly. You have to go according to the context of the sentence. There's no question about it. It's the same thing is true in the Torah. Okay. All right. Next, Beis Hillel. There the argument, I don't know if you remember, was how many sprinklings of blood upon the altar are necessary in order to effect atonement. Okay, if you remember, we pointed out that the depended on the nature of the sacrifice. The chatos, which is what they're discussing over here, requires, according to the Torah, it has to be on all four corners, okay, of the mizbeach. Most of the others require only a sprinkling of blood over here, and then the opposite corner over there, okay? The l'shtei matot, as we say, okay? And then there are some that require only matot echas. Like, for example, the Korban Pesach only requires one spritz, and that's it, okay? But the point of the argument was between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel that in the case of the chatos, how many sprinklings would be sufficient in order to effect atonement? Theoretically, there should be four, and of course, that is the mitzvah. Mitzvah meaning that this is the way it should be done. Okay? But what if there were three? Would that be yotzi? What if there were two? Would that be yotzi? According to Beis Shammai, you have to have at least two, because if you sprinkle here and there, some of the blood is going to be on all four, right? But according to Beis Hillel, this says one is sufficient, because with most of the sacrifices, they say this is really sufficient, with most sacrifices. So, again, the argument over here then is how about Beis Hillel? Here it gets a little bit involved. He says, the Tanya, we learn the Kippur. Okay. So what is this Kippur over here? The answer is that if you take a look in Sefer Vayikra at the beginning, where they discuss the different sacrifices that there are, you find the Kippur HaKohen, in other words, the Kohen performing the sacrifice, atones for the person who's bringing the sacrifice, and then in the next sacrifice, again the same expression occurs, and then another sacrifice, the expression occurs, and so on, so that the word occurs how many times? It occurs three times. Okay? So, if that's the case, so, Mipnei Hadin, right? So, we would think, you know, that maybe logically we could figure out. V'halo din hu. Why can't we argue as follows? Ne'mar domim lemato, v'ne'mar domim lemano. Okay? In other words, there are two types of chatos that are mentioned in the Torah. One is what is called the chatos ha'of, poor man, or in some cases, this is the thing that they have to bring, they bring two birds, right? One of them is for chatos, and the other one is for an ola. All right, so, in the case of the chatos, what does it say? So according to the Torah, it doesn't mention that the blood has to be splashed on all four corners. Okay? All that it says is that you just have to splash blood on the altar. So in other words, what do they say? They say that okay, so just as in the case of the chatas ha'of, okay, the bird over there, that if you just gave one sprinkling, it is sufficient, right? So then the how many sprinklings do you need for the chatas of a behema? So he says, then you should also argue then that one sprinkling would be sufficient in order to effect atonement, even in the case of the chatas behema. Or maybe that's not such a good argument. Maybe you have to give a different argument. Okay. So you can see, you know, it's like gymnastics, so to speak, right? Pardon me?
What is the lamata word, lamala? What is that?
Lamala and lamata means, in this particular case, what was mentioned first and what was mentioned last. Lamala means what was mentioned first.
Okay.
Supra, right? And the other one is... right, right. Infra. Supra and infra, you know, right, right. What is mentioned first and what is mentioned afterwards?
Up and down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it means up and down, correct. But if you imagine the text, okay, what is mentioned first? The one that's up on top. What's mentioned afterwards? Whatever is down below. Okay, so that's why they use these terms over here, right.
Yeah. You always say up and down, you never say down and up.
Okay.
Right.
That's a
an idiomatic form, which
obviously
goes across the board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he says, oh, Klach, maybe we have to change a different argument. We have to say, Nemar Domin Bachutz, the Nemar Domin Bifnim, says, we have different sacrifices, and one of them requires sprinkling on the outer altar, that's bachutz, right? And the other one requires sprinkling on the inner altar, okay? Which normally is used for incense, but there are certain special sacrifices, such as the special sacrifice of a kohen, that requires sprinkling on the inner altar rather than the outer altar. Okay? Most is on the outer altar. That's the Mizbeach, you know. But that's the Mizbeach Hachitzah, the outer altar. And the other one is Mizbeach Hapnimi, the inside one. Okay? Okay, so. So, just as in the case of those chatos that have to be sprinkled in the inner order, altar. Chiser achas batonis, if he left out one sprinkling, lo aser v'lo klum, that the whole thing is not worth anything, no good, right? Literally hasn't done anything, but it means that the, you know, it's invalid, right? So af domim ha'amurim b'chutz. So likewise, then, sprinklings that have to be on the outer altar, chiser achas batonis lo aser klum, right? So he hasn't done anything, it's invalid. In other words, have to have sprinkling on all four altars, all right? They're trying logically, again, to prove the fact that Beis Hillel's argument that one matana, in other words, one sprinkling, is sufficient in order to effect atonement. But if you're going to argue, the question is, what are you arguing? On what terms? Do you argue that just as Chatas Ha'ov only requires one, so that therefore Chatas Behemah should also require one? Or do you say that the Chatos that are on the inner altar, where definitely you must have four sprinklings, and if you omit them it's no good, then that rule should apply logically also to the one on the outer altar. So that knocks the whole opinion of Hillel out of the window, who said that's kippur, you know, just one matana, he says, just one sprinkling is enough. Do you understand? So what do we compare it to? Can you do it on the basis of logic? Okay. So he says, Nira Lami Domen. All right, let's see what is the closest parallel. Donin chutz mechutz, v'ein donin chutz mepnim. Either we have to say you judge one type of a sacrifice on the outer altar from another one on the outer altar, right? And not from something on the inner altar. Or klach l'derazu, or you go the different way. Donin b'chatas v'dalet kronas b'chatas v'yabakronas, that you have to judge a chatas which requires four sprinklings, right, from a chatas which requires four sprinklings on the four corners. V'yal yochiach zeh she'en chatas v'dalet kronas, and the one which is not a chatos where the four sprinklings are required, that's no proof. On your chiyah, doesn't prove. So Talmud Loma, so now we have to come to a conclusion. And what is the conclusion? V'chiper, mipnei hadin. There is a logical reasoning why this is the basis. Kiper, it affected atonement, even if there are only three sprinklings. Kiper, it affects atonement even if there are only two sprinklings. And kiper, right? And therefore, it still affects atonement even if there's only one sprinkling of the blood. So that this shows that, you know, Beis Hillel, that they were right in everything. Not Melon. As I say, to me it's a little... But again, it shows you, I mean, there's a big difference between what we call mitzvah, in the sense that this is what it should be, and what happens, you know, b'di'evet, if it happened. And is it effective if you did it not according to oil? Okay, that's a question. So you have, you know, you have to know. It requires a great deal of reasoning.
So, and is the custom, Hillel took the lighter view.
It's a general rule, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. But he did not win in this case. That he was overruled in this case. Did they overrule him?
No, he's not overruled. He's not overruled. But it's still not, you know, what should be required. This is only, as I said, you know, b'di'evet, if the priest only gave one sprinkling, so that's sufficient. But That's not what the priest should have done. What the priest should have done is to sprinkle it on all four corners of the altar.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't make it invalid.
No, that's the point. Right, right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, the next argument. Rabbi Shimon Rabbanan. Okay. They were arguing about a sukkah. How many walls does a sukkah require? Remember? So, according to Rabbi Shimon, you have to have 3 good solid walls. And the fourth one is enough if it's only a teflon. It's only a few inches high. Okay. What do the Chachamim say? The Chachamim say that you only need 2 solid ones, right? And 1 a teflon. That's our halacha of the Moshe of the Sinai, they say. Okay. That's fine. But what did they base it on? On the previous page, the argument was, how is it written? Is it written Sukkos with a Vav or Sukkos without a Vav, right? And if it's written Sukkos without a Vav, then for that Darshan to Chilos, then in that particular case, then you have to figure out 4. It should be, according to Chachamim, they read Sukkos, Sukkos, Sukkos all the time. So they say there are only 2 that are required, plus the third one, a shorty, okay? Whereas, according to Rabbi Shimon, so he says, no, you have to read Sukkos, 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 and therefore you have to say that 3 walls have to be good walls, and so on, right? Smachlaikas, okay. Obviously, it's better if the sukkah had 4 walls. There's no question about it. The answer is that with 3 walls, it still is possible. Like, let's say, a wall here, a wall here, a wall here, okay? But even if this one is very short over here, but if somehow or other you could get enough schach to cover over here, then it would be valid. I'm not saying that this is the desirable one.
Oh, wind would come and blow it
off. Well, if it does, then in that particular case, it's not a valid sukkah. Because the sukkah has to be able to stand in an ordinary wind. So it depends what kind of a wind. We're not talking about a tornado. The tornado, obviously, they're not going to stay around the sukkah.
Is this what allows people to hook it onto an existing wall of a house?
Yeah, that's perfectly permissible.
Yeah.
And that counts as a regular wall.
Oh, it counts as a regular wall.
Oh, yeah, it counts as a wall, absolutely. Pardon me?
No, I was just saying that one of our relatives in Israel had a 3 walls.
It's a
3 wall sukkah.
Yeah.
So I just
right. Yeah. Could be done, but I wouldn't recommend it. Can you? All right. Rabbi Shimon says the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon is that the schach does not require a special mention. So the walls, he applies, sukkah to the walls. For Rabbanan Savre, but the rabbis are the opinion that schach boikro, that the fact that you have to have schach, this requires one of those psukim. So if that's the case, you're only left with 2 psukim, and that's why you only have to have 2 walls. That's it. Okay. 2 walls plus the other one. Okay. All right, then we come to for Rabbi Akiva Rabbanan. Okay, there was but the question about the blood, that how much blood is necessary to cause defilement in an ochel? In other words, literally in a tent, but it doesn't mean a tent, any place which is covered over. So the fact that it's read as nafshos, that of course is plural, right? And how he interpreted it was that it means that if you have a revius blood coming from two people, it's already metame. For Rabban and Savri, but the rabbis were the opinion that nafshos the alma mashma, right? As far as nafshos are concerned, they're talking, in other words, the nefesh in general, and therefore they say that the revius blood has to be from one mess and not from two mess together. But still they are questioning. So you're telling me now that everybody agrees that you darsh it according to the way it's read? The Hotanya, let's take a look at another Pasuk. Pasuk says, Letotafos, 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 right? Remember that one? There are four passages in the Torah where we have the expression, or you Letotafos, right? Beinenecha. Okay, so that being the case, what does it imply? So it says, Hare Kan Arba, Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says, look, if you see Totafos without a vav, Totafos without a vav, and Totafos with a vav, then in that particular case, it means 1, 2 plus 2 is Hare Kan Arba, right? So that means you have to have four batim, right, or four parshas, whatever you want to say, and this is the opinion of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva, Eimer, Rabbi Akiva says, Eidot Sorech, he says, I don't have to go to the Pasuk in order to prove that you have to have four parshas, right, or four boxes in the Tefillin Shel Rosh, because he says, Tot, the Kaspi Shtayim, Waltz the Africa Shtayim. It says,
right.
In Kaspi language, whatever that is, something means Coptic language, the word tot means two, and in some African language, pots means two. So that, therefore, two and two, that makes up the word totafos, okay?
Oh. Yeah. That's a Rashi quote.
Right, right, wow. Correct.
Whatever explanation
you
want.
Right.
Yeah,
totafos,
that
way it's
hot.
Right, yeah.
So
but the only trouble is we don't know what those languages are. Rabbi Akiva knew those languages. We don't. Okay. But the Gemara continues, says, well, yeah, really, there's still a disagreement among the sages, right? The Hani Mili ki Kligi Hecha de Shadikot Masorah, says. Where do we find disagreement? Where the reading is different from the way it is written. Okay, so now that's the reason why we've had all this disagreement, because one interprets one way and one interprets the other way. Right? Avolhai Chalev Chalev, right? The Chihadori Ninhu, right? There, the word is written, right? They're exactly identical. Okay? Then Yeshem LeMikra. Then we have to say go according to way it is read. So far so good, right? So now they come in with another one. The Hare is written Yeh-ra-eh. If you remember, Shalosh Pyamim Bashador, right, and so on, or Shalosh Vigolim Bashador, Yeh-ra-eh Kos Chucho. All your males are commanded to appear literally to be seen in the Beis HaMikdash on the pilgrimage festivals, okay? Pardon me?
The
frontless. Who knows what a frontless is? You know what a frontless is? You know what a phylactery is?
Yeah.
Fancy word. Phylactery in Greek means something that takes care of you. I mean, it's sort of like an amulet or something like that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, to us, tefillin and amulets, they contain something much more deep than that. Okay.
We wouldn't be permitted to use them if they were amulets.
Right. Right. Well, right. Some people use amulets respite. Right. That's an argument. It is and it isn't. I mean, there's no specific prohibition, but nevertheless, it's frowned upon. Right, it's frowned upon. Right, yeah. Okay. So, how about you? No? Let me hear one, Apis. Right, go on. It's spelled exactly alike. Ufligi. And nevertheless, there is an opinion. The Tanya, as we've learned, Yochanan ben Dahavai Omer, he says, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema, he says, Hasuma biachas b'yedov, someone who is blind in one eye, potum in hara'iya. He is excused from going on the pilgrimage to Yerushalayim. Shenemar, because it's written, right? Yeroeh, Yireh. In other words, he could read it one way, or he could read it the other way. And he gives a touch. He says, Kederach Shebo Leroos, Kederach Shebo Liros, excuse me, Kederach Shebo Liros, just as the pilgrim comes in order to see what? The Beis HaMikdash, right? Kach Bo Leroos, so likewise he comes to be seen by whom? By the Rebbe Shalom in the temple, right? Mal diros bishdeyenov, just as to see you require two eyes, so afle rovos bishdeyenov. So likewise, to be seen also requires two eyes. Elo amar Rav Acha b'reid Rav Hiko, but getting back again to the one of the arguments that we had before, Omakor, the Pasuk says, Loi Sevashel Gedi, right? Torah tells us, you shall not cook the kid, right? So, Derech Bishul Osra Torah. The Torah has forbidden us to cook. And what can you cook it? Can you cook it in chalev? No. You can only cook it in milk. And this is the whole basis of what? A whole system of kashrus, of, you know, of the milchig and fleshig is based upon this. So that's it. No argument further. Okay. I think that's enough. Okay, today is what? The 21st? Yeah, the 21st of May. Okay. And we have one line left in Gemara Sanhedrin, Daf Dalet Amud Beis. And it begins with the words Tonu Rabbanan, our sages taught us, and the Mishnah, of course, Dine Momen is Bishlesha, right? That monetary affairs require a bezdin of three. So far, so good. So now, on this new page, we'll see, but maybe there's an exception. Okay. Okay.
I wouldn't know what.
All right, so let's go. The im hoye mumchel rabim, we're on Daf Hey right now.
Yeah.
All right. And if he was a mumchel rabim, then afil yichidi. I'll explain that in a second. Then he can judge even all by himself. So the question is, who is a mumchel rabim? Mumchel modern Hebrew means an expert, and that's, of course, it's understood. I mean, the word itself is derived from this idea that we had over here, an expert.
An expert.
In other words, he's accepted by the multitude as being an expert in this field.
Who is this?
The sage who is asked to judge.
Oh.
No, he's whoever it is. I mean, the Rav who's asked to paskin. Okay? So he says that if he is a mumcha l'rabim, then in that case he can judge even if he's only, he's the only judge. Right.
Who decides whether he's a mumcha or not?
Ah, that we'll have to find out.
Oh, I see.
Right. So the next line tells us, Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman said, Kegon Anoch, somebody like me, he says. I can judge monetary affairs all by myself. Likewise, Rabbi Chiya said the same thing. Kegon Anoch, just like me, he says. Someone like me. Don't do any moment they speak
Very humble
right.
people, right?
Very humble, right?
Very humble.
So therefore, now we have to give a definition, right? What does it mean, like me?
Like me.
Okay. So the question was asked to them. Kigon Noah, you say like me. In what respect? The Gamirna that I have learned, the Sabirna, and I know how to apply logic from what I have learned, right? Unakitna Rashusa, and I've also received permission, what we would call like smicha, you know. In other words, I got a degree, okay? We didn't get there yet.
Oh, excuse me.
Avalon the Rashusa, then Dine Lodina. However, if he does not have this permission, then in that particular case, his judgment is not any judgment. In other words, it's an invalid judgment. So if you are learned, right, and if you know how to apply law based upon your experience, and if also you have special permission, as I say, you know, special license, so to speak, right, then in that particular case, then you can judge by yourself. But otherwise.
Who assigns this title?
All right, so now we're going to find out.
But you skipped over the part where you said Reish Kalukah.
We didn't get there. We didn't get there yet.
Okay.
We didn't get there. Turned the wrong page or a long line or something. I don't know. All right, Dilma. So they say, maybe what? Maybe if he didn't get that paper, maybe that his judgment is still valid. In other words, if he decided the case, that's it. So Toshma, so they say, okay, listen, I'll give you an example. The Mar Zutra Bere the Rab Nachman Don Dino. Mar Zutra, who was the son of Rab Nachman, I don't have to tell you, it's quoted again and again and again as being one of the great expert judges, okay? So, as a matter of fact, he's on line two over there. He's the first one who says what? Kigodana, like me, right? Someone like me, right? So here's his son, Mar Zutra. And he's also a judge. So Don Dino, and obviously we're talking about he judged all by himself, right? The Torah, and he made a mistake in his judgment. He realized afterwards that he had given the wrong decision.
So how did he rectify that?
That's right. Okay. So, also the Kame the Rav Yosef. So he came to Rav Yosef to ask Hashaila, what should he do? Okay. So Omalei. So he said unto him, Im kiblu chalayhu lo tishalem. If the Balei Din, in other words, the people who were the litigants of the judgment, if they have accepted you as able to judge them, even though you would be the only judge, is what we have to understand over here, then in that case, you don't pay the low, but if not, then Zil Shalem, then you have to go and you have to pay. Who do you pay? The answer is, okay, A and B are having an argument. They come to him, okay, for judgment. Okay, he says B is the one who's in the right, and obviously then A has to pay money to B.
Right.
Okay?
So
then afterwards he realizes that in reality A was the one who is right.
Right.
So he can't run back to B and say, give me back my money. Give me back the money because I want to pay A. Instead, what happens? He has to pay out of his own pocket. The judge has to recompense the litigant out of his own pocket because he made a mistake in his judgment. Okay? So, if he has the reshus, then in that case, he's excused from payment.
What do you mean the reshus?
That permission.
I still am not clear on who gives the permission here.
Huh?
Who gives the permission?
We'll see. A little patience.
Okay.
Okay, we'll see in a few moments. Okay. All right. So, anyway, at this point, he says to him, right, that if they're willing to abide by a decision, no matter what it might be, then in that particular case, he says, that's it, whatever it is. He made a mistake, but that's it. But if they're not satisfied, they feel that you did wrong, then in that particular case, you have to go and pay. All right. Shmabino. Okay. Kilay nokit b'shuso dine dine. So from this we see that even though in the case of, you know, Mazutra, that the fact that he was told that he did not have to pay, because why? Because the litigants were willing to accept his judgment, whatever it might be, then in that particular case, so he didn't have to pay, even though he did not get reshus. He didn't get that permission. He didn't receive that paper. Okay? So now, the question is, who gives it, right? So, Amar Rav, Rav said, Hai man neboi lemeidon dina. If a man wants to judge, unless we're talking about a scholar who wants to judge, we're not talking about the ordinary guy in the street, right? The toy, neboi lemniftura, and if he made a mistake, he wants to be free from having to pay the person, you know, the litigant, out of his own pocket, then he says, Lishko Rishusa Mebe Resh Golusa. Then he should get the Rishus, in other words, he should get this certification, right, from the household of the Resh Golusa. All right, so now, historically, what is the Resh Golusa? When the Jews were exiled to Babylonia, obviously they continued as a community. Okay?
Absolutely.
Under the Persians, no matter which Persian group was ruling over there, but for centuries and centuries, there was a recognized head of the Jewish community. He was called the Resh Golusa, and not only was he the head of the Jewish community, but actually he was considered as the third most important person in the realm. And
by Jews?
No, by the government. By the Persian government.
Really?
The official government, right. And, you know, he had tremendous power because he could levy taxes, his courts were recognized by the government and things like that and so on. So, was a very, very important position. So therefore, he was in a position to issue a certificate of, what shall we say, a certificate of the particular authorization, right, that this person is competent enough, you know, in order to judge without having to pay. In other words, it amounts to sort of like smicha on the part of the...
Was elected or what?
No.
He was appointed by the person?
Yeah, he was appointed by the government, but he was from the family. He was a descendant, actually, of the last kings of the first kingdom.
David?
David was a long, long time before that. I'm talking about he was a descendant of Jehoiachin. Jehoiachin was exiled from Judea in the year 597. He was considered, incidentally, the legitimate king. Tzidkiyahu was sort of, you know, he was appointed by the Babylonians, and they considered him that he didn't have the same legitimate status. although he was recognized as the king and everything else, but still they considered Yochanan as being the real king of the Jewish people. And the Reish Galusa was a descendant of Yehoyachin. So that the idea of the Davidic dynasty continued right through in Babylonia.
What's the difference between the
Reish Galusa and the Exilach? The Exilach is the fancy English word for Reish Galusa.
Oh.
The Ark in Greek, A-R-C-H, that means rule. This is why, again, monarchy, okay?
So it's one of the things
right.
Never heard this term.
Right, yeah. So exilarch is a fancy way of saying the head, you know, the ruler of the exile, okay? Because the Babylonians considered themselves the Golas. They were the Golas people, okay? So, he's the racial leader. Maybe, but it was recognized for centuries and centuries.
If you're politically oriented to the government, you became British Belusa, then you can sell permission to do judgments and so forth. It's a big pan of
all words, right. But we have to assume that the people who were British Belusa, that they were also scholars, as well as, you know, given like prince. The status of being a prince in the realm and things like that. So, yeah. And as I say, it's continued for centuries that we had a Reish Galusa. Right. At times, the rabbis were angry with them, as we'll see. Particularly, sometimes, not the Reish Galusa, but his household, you know, his servants and his courtiers and so on and so forth, were sometimes not the finest people. Okay? So, all right, so far we have then the statement of Rav that says that if you want to have, so to speak, this kind of smichas,